Let's turn to Genesis 37. We will continue our study of the book of Genesis as we go through the Bible in 7 years. We are currently going through the book of Ephesians. In Sunday school, we were doing Psalms before that. We've transitioned to doing Psalms on Wednesday nights, and so they've already gone through Thessalonians and Daniel on Wednesday nights as well. And so, but you can see that as we've gone through the book of Genesis, we've started all with creation and moved on through. We are into the life of Jacob right now, but today we are actually going to transition into one of his sons, and that is Joseph. We're going to be moving into Joseph's life, and there's going to be a lot to be seen as we look at in the life of Joseph. We're going to do a five-part mini-series, if you would. As we look at the dreamer, as some would refer to him as in the beginning, this chapter 37, we see him in that light as the dreamer. I want to kind of preface all this with the fact that of something in philosophy and even in science, a principle known as the principle of cause and effect. And we recognize cause and effect. We recognize that every action there is an equal and opposite reaction in the scientific world. But in philosophy, we understand as well that there is a cause and effect relationship that, you know, I hit a cue ball. The cue ball rolls down the billiard table, if you would. It hits the rack. And the rack is what the balls are called in the beginning, you know, when they're in that little triangle position. And when the ball rolls down, depending on the velocity and such like that, what happens to the rack? It scatters. And depending upon the angle and the velocity and so on and so forth, the rack scatters in different ways. But the rack didn't scatter, the effect of the scattering, if you would. The rack didn't scatter on its own. The rack scattered as a result of an influence that was upon it, which we refer to as the cause. Well, just in life, there are cause and effects, right? I'm riding through down the street. I'm minding my own business. I'm listening to worship tunes on my MP3 player or on the radio or whatever, and you decide not to stop, adhere the laws of the land, or fail to see that little red rectangle with the white letters on it. And so you continue on through the stop sign, right? And you do what? You smash into my car. Okay? Now, probably, if being that I knew you couldn't see me around the trees, I'd start to wonder whether you did it on purpose, but no, anyways. But I'm riding down, I'm minding my own business, I'm worshiping the Lord, right? And all of a sudden, into my life comes a different cause, if you would. Something happens into my life. And that cause that just entered in my life is going to have a what? An effect. That's right. Okay? The question is, what kind of effect will that troublesome situation, that cause that came into my life, have? Now, we talk about that a lot from different angles, but today I want to talk about that from Genesis 37. Because as we look at Genesis 37, we're going to see some cause and effect that happened. Three causes leading to one effect, okay? And the effect, you already know, you're ahead of me, and the effect is going to be what? Joseph's going to be thrown into slavery, right? But what I want to look at is these causes. And I want to look at them in a way maybe that you've never looked at them before. I love getting into the language, and so I've got into the languages, and I saw something in this today, or not today, but earlier this week, that I've never really seen before, and so I'm going to throw it at you, and you can say, heaven forbid, God forbid that this should be. So, let's start off looking at some of these causes that are here. The first cause I want to look at is this report that Joseph gave. Remember at the very beginning of the chapter here, we read that Jacob had sent out his son, who was 17 years old, his name was Joseph, along with his brothers, and they were watching the sheep. But when they came back in, Joseph gave a what? A bad report. Now, literally, Ra'ah Dibah, okay, is evil slander. It changes the concept here just a little bit, doesn't it, about what this word actually means. And so just to show you what Joseph did according to the scriptures, okay, using the same word in Numbers 13 and in Numbers 14, this is the same word, Dibah, which is what we're talking. Ra'ah means evil or bad, okay? So, for example, in the beginning of Genesis, we read about the tree of good and evil. Okay, that's ra'ah. So, ra'ah is anything that's not what? Good. Makes sense? Okay, it's the opposite of good. Well, divah is the word that we're talking about here, though. And so when the 10 spies brought back their report, okay, is what they brought back as a ra'ah deva, okay, they brought back an evil report, okay, is what it says. But how is that report described? Does anybody remember? I'm calling upon your Bible knowledge now. How is that report also described when the spies came back? What did they do with the information that they had received in the land of Canaan? They made the hearts of the people to faint, but why? What did they do with the knowledge that they had? Ah, it was in the presentation of the data. And they embellished the information as well. We were like as grasshoppers. Now, come on, honestly now. So let's consider a man and another man. Even David and Goliath, we understand that there's a huge ratio. But was David really like a grasshopper? No, not at all. Okay, and so they began to turn the hearts and sway the minds of the people based upon the presentation of the data. They gave an evil slander, if you would. Slander is any time you purposely, let me read this right so that I don't mess this up here, okay? It was purposely malicious in a defaming report, okay? So you purposely give information in a malicious and defaming way. Does that make sense? Your intent is to bring evil. So you have an evil, slanderous moment. Does that make sense? That really makes it what? Doubly bad, doesn't it? Okay? Well, in Psalm 31, David writes, "For I hear the slander of many, fear is on every side, while they take counsel together against me. They scheme to take away my life." Slander. This is not just a report of something that David had done. This is people seeking to take information and to do what? To twist it to bring about an evil reaction. Does that make sense? Proverbs 10:18, "Whoever hides hatred has lying lips, and whoever spreads slander is a fool." You see where we're going here? This is the word. It's only used 9 times, I believe. Let me make sure of my... So I am not exaggerating. Yes, it's only used 9 times in the Hebrew. Okay? Proverbs 25, verses 9 and 10 says, "Debate your case with your neighbor, and do not disclose the secret to another, lest he who hears it expose your shame and your reputation be ruined." Literally, your reputation be ruined says, "and the slander not be turned or turned away." Okay? The idea is that you have shared some inside scoop with somebody else, and then at an opportune moment, they do what? They take that information to turn it people against you. Do you understand? They twist the information that you just gave them so that they can turn people against you. They used it in a malicious, defamatory way. Okay? This is the word that is there about Joseph. And in Jeremiah 20, verses 8 and 10, we read, "For when I spoke, I cried out, I shouted violence and plunder, because the word of Yahweh was made to me a reproach and a derision daily. Then I said, I will not make mention of him, nor speak any more in his name." This is Jeremiah saying. He says, every time I speak the word of the Lord, it's always bad. And because it's bad, nobody likes me. And so everybody is hating me here. So I said, that's it. I'm just not going to speak the word of the Lord anymore. But I couldn't do that, right? He says, "I will not make mention of him nor speak any more in his name. But his word was in my heart like a burning fire, shut up in my bones. I was weary of holding it back, and I couldn't." In other words, I just had to what? I had to let it out. Verse 10, "For I heard many mocking," or literally, "I heard many slander." Terror is all around, or fear on every side. In other words, these people are all around me, and they're doing what? They're slandering me. They're saying things about me that isn't true. They're trying to bring the king against me. They're trying to bring the people against me. And so there's terror all around me. "Report," they say, "and we will report it. All my acquaintances watch for my stumbling, saying, perhaps he can be induced. Then we will prevail against him, and we will take our revenge on him." All right. Now, with all those other passages using this word, let's go back to Genesis 37. And think about slander. We'll come to the coat in just a moment. What was Joseph doing? He was trying to get his father against his other brothers. He had gone out with them. Maybe they didn't follow the leather law or something, I guess, okay? But the reality is, if my kids came to me with this information, what would I say that they were doing? They were tattling. They were tattling. And when you tattle on somebody, ultimately, what's your desire? Is to get them in trouble. Ha! Okay, that's right. And Proverbs says that the one who's tattling should get the punishment of the one they're seeking to bring it on. I like to use that. You're with my kids. So, do you want to get what you're trying to get the other one to get? No, I wasn't doing that to get them in trouble. Yes, you were. Let's be honest, because lying gets double punishment, okay? So, you know, that's a trust factor here. So let's just be honest. Admit the sin that's in your heart, okay? Rather, Proverbs tells us that love, what? Covers a multitude of sins. It doesn't reveal them. Rather, if you have an issue with somebody, what should you do with it? You go to them. But we need to remember that Joseph was how old? 17. More than likely, Joseph acted like what? A 17-year-old. Does it make sense? Sometimes we kind of elevate these people again in the Bible, and we make them more than they were. Remember, we talked about this with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, and I'm not trying to destroy all your biblical heroes. Okay? I just want us to think about these people in a real-life sense. He was a 17-year-old kid who, honestly, as we're going to see now with the coat, was his daddy's what? Favorite. Do you think his brothers liked him a whole lot? No, we actually read that his brothers what? Hated him. Okay, and so now let's add another cause and effect in here. We have the partiality of the parents. Okay, and we have this coat, the description of the coat. We read that it's a coat of what? Many colors. Actually, it's the only time this Hebrew word is used, and they're not really sure what it means. Okay, some say that in some of your versions that you're using right now, it may say that it was a long coat. Okay, a coat with long sleeves. Okay, what they believe is the derivative of the word, it means to conceal. And so, maybe a long, flowing robe that would conceal the feet and maybe conceal the arms or whatever, okay? So, regardless of whether it's a coat of many colors, regardless of whether it's a long, flowing coat, what we understand about this coat is what? It was special. And nobody else had one. That's exactly right. Daddy had one ordered or had one made special for his favorite. Now, I got 7 kids. Now, if you got one, more than likely you can have a favorite, okay? And it's okay, all right? It's very okay. But I have to have equally 7 favorites. Does that make sense, right? And you can't tell anybody, Matt. I mean, if they know, then I'm really in trouble, okay? And so, but if we had the conversation, I'd probably say the same thing to every single one of them. You know, Anna, don't tell everybody else that you're my favorite. It's just okay. They think they're my favorites too, okay? And but equally, Jessica's laughing because she's, until a couple weeks ago, she really, I just boiled it. She really thought she was it for, you know, 20-something years. And she, I know, now it's destroyed. My whole family life is now gone. I'm glad that most of them are raised up and gone. So anyways, but the reality is, I mean, I try to make each one of them a favorite in some manner. Because every single one of them, for good and bad, reflect me in some manner. Okay, I try to ignore the bad side, you know. That's from Marcia's side, of course, you know. And but there is some manner in their life that's reflective of me or something that I can click with them on. Does that make sense? I mean, there's other things I can't click. Their personality types are different. You know, I'll pick on Matt for a second, since, you know. But Matt is social. I'm not as social, you know. And so Matt just would love that. But there are certain things in Matt that he and I can click on. And so those are the things that I've got to what? I've got to focus on, I've got to click, you know, because I don't want him to feel, probably as he has at different times, that he's not as important as the other ones. And I'm sure the other ones have felt that way somewhere along the line as well. But I want them to each to realize that they are very special to me. Now, I don't know whether I've been successful in all that or not, okay? But that's the goal. Jacob didn't have that goal. Does that make sense? And it was very evident. We talked about that. When Esau was was coming, and he didn't know what Esau was going to do, and he set up all of his kids in their what? Priority. The ones he liked the most were in the back. The ones he liked the least were up front. That's exactly right. If somebody was going to be destroyed, then let it be the slave girl's kids. Okay? And then the one who was in the back was Joseph. Okay, so everybody knew Joseph was most important. Remember, Benjamin wasn't born until after that moment, okay? And so now we have Joseph, and then we have Benjamin as well, which we're going to find out in a week or two. Actually, not next week, but it'll probably be 2 or 3 weeks from now, that Benjamin takes the place of Joseph as being the daddy's favorite, okay? And so we now we have this coat. Well, the importance of the coat then was it clearly set Joseph apart as being the favorite. Well, as we read, then again, brothers didn't like him a whole lot. Well, what's the third thing that happens here? Well, we have the dreams. Well, what do we know about the dreams? I think, as I read this, that there's just a hint of pride coming out in Joseph here. Could I be wrong? I could be wrong. But you think about it. If you're in the family, okay, your brother, because we'll pick on brothers because this is Joseph, right? He has a dream one night. And in the first dream, we have the dream of the sheaves, right? And in the dreams, there are 12 sheaves, right? And they're all being bound. And then 11 of the sheaves bow down to your sheaf. Now, it didn't take a rocket scientist to figure out the answer to this one, right? All the brothers knew it the minute Joseph presented it. Now, again, we can read in how he presented it. We're not told. And Joseph presented this information with a sly kind of voice. And Joseph presented this with a very humble voice. You know, we're not told. So you normally, you're going to read in, when you picture this, you read in what you think happened here. But based upon what I just discovered about the report that he gave, I begin to wonder about the attitude that Joseph had in thinking 17, 18-year-old here. How did he present this information? Did he present it in a very humble manner? Guys, you just won't believe this. I mean, you know you have dreams sometimes that just kind of remember in the morning. Some other dreams you just kind of, you know, you had dreams, but you can't really remember them. I had this dream, you know, sheaves. I mean, and there was 12 sheaves, and one sheaf was, you know, all the other sheaves bowed down to this one sheaf. What do you think it means? You know, it's kind of like the, you know, Pharaoh thing. You know, he didn't kind of know. You know, he had the corn, he had the cows, and all this was happening, and he didn't know what it meant, so he's looking for an interpreter. It didn't really happen that way, but Joseph did it. We're going to find out Joseph's also the what? The interpreter of the dreams. He's the one who had the dreams and the interpreter of the dream. And so I kind of wonder whether Joseph, when he's given this information out and says, hey guys, guess what happened last night? I had a dream. And there were 12 sheaves of wheat, man, you know? You each had one. Every one of us had one. And, dude, all your sheaves bow down to me. Well, to my sheaf, you know, as it is. What do you think it means? Didn't go over very well. We read that his brothers hated him even more because of it. And then he has a second dream. And now he dreams about stars, you know? And he actually dreams about the sun and the moon, right? And so he's dreaming of the heavens now. You know, the first one was terrestrial, and this is celestial. And so he's dreaming of these 12 stars, and well, actually 11 stars, and the sun and the moon. And this time, he's even beyond the sun and the moon. He's not just a star, right? He's beyond them all. And what happens? The 11 stars in the sun and the moon, they bow down to him. Now, the first dream in its public introduction may seem audacious as it is. The second one, I think, really reflects an audacious personality. I mean, he's not just saying it to his brothers. He's telling who? He's telling Daddy. It's one thing for Shiloh to be nipping at Andrew's hands. And Andrew says, Shiloh, stop, stop, Aunt Shiloh, stop, stop. But if Shiloh bites my hand, guess what? Shiloh regrets the moment, okay? And realizes you don't bite Alpha's hand, okay? Well, Joseph is finding out that what? You don't bite Alpha's hand, okay? Who's Jacob? He's Alpha, okay? And so now all of a sudden here they are at breakfast or wherever it's at, and Joseph shares about this dream, and says, gee, and even the sun and the moon, they bow down to me. Again, everybody kind of understood what was being stated. And Jacob, back at him, you know. Who do you think you are? You think your mother and I are going to bow down to you too? I remember when your brothers told me about this a couple weeks ago. I thought, well, audacious kid, maybe it'll happen. But now you're going to say that mom and dad are going to bow down to you? Who do you think you are? I have a mind to send you out in the field by yourself, boy. But then we're told that Jacob did what? He kept them in his heart. Does that just like click with you about that statement? And he kept these things in his heart? Mary. Very good. That's exactly right. And Mary kept these things in her heart. Mary pondered these things in her heart. Even though there was great turmoil in Mary's life when Jesus was born and she was pregnant with Jesus and stuff, and she didn't know how all was going to be, she kept it. Even though she wasn't quite sure how all this was going to be, she kept it. And so Jacob, you know, his first reaction is, you know, who do you think you are, you sniffling kid? I brought you into the world. I can take you back out and all this kind of stuff. But yet, he realized what? God's given him dreams. Maybe there's something to it. Okay? Now, again, the reaction of the brothers to these dreams are not necessarily very positive. Okay? And so we have these causes that are brought into this situation. Okay? And so, instead of putting yourself in Joseph's position, which we normally like to do because he's the hero of the story, put yourself into Reuben and Simeon and Levi and Gad's position. See, in fact, it would be really interesting, and I forgot to put this one on there, but if you have your sermon note sheets, you have this little inset block there with the kids. If you have that, if it's on the you have a small edition, it's on the back side, on the big edition's on the front there. Do I have them on there? I do, with Leah's and her kids and stuff like that. I want you to note that it says that when Joseph brought back that evil slander, that evil report, it was only regarding the sons of the handmaids. So it was against Gad and Asher, Dan and Naphtali. It wasn't necessarily against the sons of Leah, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, and Zebulun. And I say that because this next part then is going to be a little interesting here. Okay? Because it's not Asher and Naphtali and Gad and Dan that we see are the ones who are inciting this next part. And that is when we get now into the effects. Well, the effects starts with the task, okay? Jacob has sent his sons out to do what? To watch the sheep. How many sons went out to take care of the sheep? 11. Wrong. 10. That's exactly right. Benjamin is still quite young. He's not going out. And we know that Joseph didn't go. How? He's getting sent. Now, I think we're told earlier in the chapter about the bad report that came back for a particular reason, right? Because Joseph is the what? The tattletale. Joseph's the tattletale.
Tattletale. You're always mom and dad about us. We can't do anything, you know. I mean, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da,
right? Well, I know. Big boys don't talk like that, do we? You know, we just what? Think it. Okay? And so since Joseph is 17 or so at the time, and he's the youngest other than Benjamin, we know that the brothers then are between 18 and 25-ish, okay, at this point, okay? So they're all young 20s, so you've got a lot of guys out there with a lot of testosterone built up. Make sense? We're not talking about guys even in their late 20s or 30s or 40s that are starting to mellow out at all. These guys all have a lot of energy. Okay? They have a lot of, you know, wanting to get in the fight. Make sense? I'm looking at some of you guys and you're looking at me like, I don't remember those days. You remembering those days, guys? You know? We haven't gotten too far, right? So they're there. So Joseph goes out and he's given this task to go check on his brothers. Well, he heads first off to Shechem. Kind of interesting. Okay. Back to dad's old stomping grounds, to where the sheep and goats might be. But when he gets there, he finds out that they're not there. And what does he do? Oh, no, he doesn't talk to some man. He flounders. He's walking around. He can't find them. He's trying to figure out where they could be. I wonder, does he say up a quick prayer to God? We're not told this. I don't know. Okay? But then all of a sudden, a man finds him out in the middle of the field. I've heard this preached that this is the angel of the Lord, but I'm not told that. Okay? Normally when the angel of the Lord shows up, we're told that it is. But I find it interesting that some guy, generic, finds him in the middle of the field and says to him, hey, what are you looking for? Oh, I'm looking for my brothers. Oh, well, they went on to Dothan. And so, out of the blue, Joseph gets this information. Go find his brothers. I mean, it's like New Jersey, okay? Think of the state of New Jersey, okay? And you're coming from South Jersey up to North Jersey. There's a whole lot of North Jersey, isn't there? Okay? I mean, it's not like it's cities and highways and stuff like that. There's just a whole lot of fields out there, okay? And so you kind of go toward the Atlantic Ocean part of it, okay? And you're looking all around, and you have no clue. Well, they moved over toward the Pennsylvania side of New Jersey. It's kind of the picture. You picturing this? Okay. How do you know where to go? Other than some guy just happens to meet you out in the fields and says, they went to the other side of the state, quote unquote, if you would. Okay. And then you go over to Dothan and you find them in the middle of a field. Okay. Kind of fun stuff. So they have this task. Well, this task, first of all, I think is ill-advised for Jacob to be sending Joseph, who wasn't liked very well anyway and who has a reputation of being a tattletale. And so I know that because when he gets there, the first reaction that we see of his brothers is to have an attitude. An attitude of what? Conspiracy. First thing it says when they see him from afar off, how do they know who it was from afar off? It's from his coat. That's exactly right. Dead mark, man. I mean, not many people walk around with this special coat on, right? So they see the special son with a special coat coming to get a special report about them, no doubt. And then he's going to do what? He's going to go back home and get them in a lot of trouble. Okay? Yeah, you guys are tracking with this one. Okay? And so they have, you know, they're thinking like unbelievers at the time, okay? And so they look at their brother, who's not really their brother. He's only a stepbrother. He's not full-fledged brother. He's from that other woman, okay? And so and he's trying to shoot us down anyway and take all the goods when dad dies. And so they look at him and they have an attitude. And their attitude is, let's take him out. Let's take him out. Now, who do we know from further on in the story who probably is the one who instigated the sale of him to the Midianites? And probably then was the one who instigated trying to kill him. No, not Judah. No, not Reuben. Reuben tried to save him.
Asher?
Not Asher. You'd like to think that because your brother's middle name is Asher. I heard it. Who said it? No, it wasn't Benjamin. Simeon. Simeon, that's exactly right. I knew if we kept going, we only had so many of them to go through. Okay, but Simeon, why Simeon? Why is it probably Simeon who's instigating all this?
Second born.
Not, yeah, but that's not reason why.
He's a Bila or Zilpha?
No. You'll figure it out in a couple weeks. Okay, anyways, no, here, I'll tell you now. When Joseph is in power, and he has his brothers, and he lets them go, he keeps one guy in jail. Who is it? Simeon. And when his brothers are talking, right, the guy that everybody points at is Simeon, okay? I mean, Joseph knows who's, okay? It was also Simeon and Levi who were the ones who we just saw killed off all the men of Shechem, right? Simeon's got this anger bent in him, okay? I mean, I can't prove it otherwise other than every time we see Simeon, he's trying to kill somebody, you know? He's trying to get out a little of anger here, okay? And so I'm thinking Simeon, probably not Reuben, okay? Why not Reuben?
Because
he tried to protect him. He said, no, guys, no, don't do that. Let's just put him in a pit. And he said put him in a pit because he was thinking later on, maybe when they're asleep or whatever, he can get him up out of the pit and get him back to daddy. Even though Reuben's the one who wound up sleeping on Bilhah, one of dad's concubines, okay, and got himself a bad name, Reuben still is seeking to be the proper firstborn, okay? And so he made his mistakes, but he's still trying to honor his father, and he's trying to do what's right. Well, sad thing is that their attitude turns into action, right? And so they begin to take him. They strip off his special robe, whether of many colors or long, whatever it is. They throw him into the pit. And they're thinking of ways that they can knock him off. It would be incredible to wonder whether that pit was near the fire that night and whether Joseph listened to the conversation of how the brothers were probably thinking about ways that they could get revenge on him. Make sense? And anyways, Reuben, though, is trying to do it otherwise. But while Reuben is off, and we're not sure what he's doing while he's off, maybe he's checking on the sheep, maybe it was his turn or whatever, but while he's away, we have some Midianite traders who come down. They're heading to Egypt, and one of the things that the Midianite traders sold and traded were people, slaves, people. And so, again, from afar off, they see the caravan coming, and one of the brothers says, hey, there is no profit in killing our brother. He must be American. I mean, he's an American Christian. I mean, think about it. There's got to be some kind of profit in this. If I write a book that I believe that God gave me a special message, what should I do with it? Sell it! I should make sure that all my brothers and sisters in Christ pay me some money for the message that God has given me for them to have. Aren't you glad that Peter, Paul, James, and John didn't do that? Wouldn't it be kind of rough? I mean, Jesus told them, freely you received what? Freely give. Maybe say I'm extrapolating too much, but I may not. Hey, aren't these brothers? And their first reaction was, why should we kill them? We need to make some profit off them. We got to be careful. Sometimes we have that little materialistic mentality that, you know, we've got to make money off of everything. You know, I've heard it said, different things we do. I'm a give kind of guy, you know. And maybe that's just a spiritual gift, okay? And so I'm not taking credit for it, you know, whatever. But I get frustrated sometimes when I hear people say, listen, people won't value it if they don't have to pay for it. Huh. Well, that's their loss. You know? I mean, freely receive, freely give. I think it's a testimony of Christ, you know? So, but these brothers didn't get that, okay? And so they said, let's sell them off. So they had this transaction. The Midianite traders stop. They grab Joseph out of the pit, right? And they give him to the Midianites. Well, they don't just give him to the Midianites. They what? They sell him to the Midianites. And they sell him to the Midianites for how much? 20 pieces of silver. Okay. Math question. Why 20 pieces? Two each. There's 10 of them. Okay? At least they were fair in the bargain. I mean, even Reuben, who wasn't there when they sold him, was going to get a share of the bounty. Could you imagine coming back and you're Reuben? And the first thing you do is check the pit to find out how Joseph's doing. Maybe you're throwing some bread and everything into him. You know, you're trying to take care of him. You're lowering a little bit of water or whatever. You're trying to say, look at me. I'll try to help you out. I'm going to try to get you out of this thing. You know, I'm sorry, you know, for all this. You know, you're an idiot, but I'm still, you know, I don't want to see you killed. And so, you know, I'm going to try to help you out. And then he goes back to the pit, and all of a sudden, Joseph's what? Gone. Well, he knows Joseph didn't climb out by himself, right? And so he's, you know, and so he goes to his brothers, and his brothers say, shut up, here's your 2 pieces of silver. Now, I don't want to make Reuben into the knight in shining armor, neither do I want to make him into the worst villain. But what's the next thing we read after Reuben sees that Joseph's gone? They come up with a deception, right? Reuben has his sorrow, and he's oy-vey and everything, right? But the minute he finds out there's nothing he can do, he says, okay, what are we going to tell Dad? All right, give me my 2 pieces of silver. Let's move on with this thing now. What are we going to do? Well, they decide we still have the what? The special robe. Let's tear it up a little bit here, make it look like an animal, a wild animal. And it's interesting, just so you know as well, the word for wild animal, the word wild, is actually ra'ah, an evil animal. Okay, so when you think of that word evil as well, when it's not used of a moral quality from that perspective, that's what it's used for. Okay, an evil animal, one that would kill people. Okay, and so they say, let's just make it look like this ra'ah animal, this wild animal, this evil animal, destroyed him. Okay, and so they dip it in goat's blood. They're really glad that they don't do DNA tests back then, okay? Wouldn't that be something? Okay? And so they go back to their father. Could you imagine this? I mean, as a dad, I mean, I'm putting myself in Jacob's point of view at this moment. I really don't want to be in the boy's point of view. Clearly, I would have never done this to my dad. I probably did. Maybe not at this level. I didn't kill off my brother or sell my brother. Even though I might have wanted to, I didn't do it. I didn't have the ability to do that probably. But we've done these things to our parents at times. But could you imagine being Jacob right now? This isn't just one of your sons. This is the favorite son. And they're slick. They don't come back and say, hey, look at Joseph's robe. They said, Dad, we found this robe. You know, probably along the road, you embellish it a little bit more. You know, we're coming back. We can kind of see this robe. Da 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 da, and we kind of wondered, you know, do you think it is? you know, and Jacob just, you know, just melts down at this moment. And he says, I will what? I'm going to go to the grave mourning him. I'm going to go to the place that he is. I want to be with him that bad. I'm going to go to where he is mourning him. And then we're told that all the brothers tried to do what? Comfort him. I don't know if you've ever been there, but there are times when you know people really don't care and they try to be a comfort to you. And many times you can what? See through it. And I don't know whether Jacob felt this way or not, but I wonder at this moment whether some of Jacob's favoritism is starting to cause him to think with the other relationships that he's having. I don't know. But the cause and effect, as we see all this, you know, there's a spiritual angle to all this as well. We're looking at a physical cause and effect situation here. But there's a spiritual side of this, isn't there? You know, a lot of us think, in the same way, that we can do things, and there's no consequences to it. But God gives us cause and effect in His Bible. And you all know it. The wages of sin is death. The wages of sin is death. God says, now He's talking about giving, and specifically giving to the church and giving to those who are teaching you the word. And I'm not saying this selfishly, okay? But just context, Galatians chapter 6. But you all know the passage. And it says, be not deceived. God is not mocked. Whatsoever man soweth, that also shall he reap. If he sows to his flesh, he shall of his flesh reap corruption. But if he sows to his spirit, he shall of his spirit reap life everlasting. And then he goes on and says, so that you should sow to the household of faith. Okay? And so the point is, if you want to reap spiritually, you need to be putting your money where your mouth is, where your heart is, okay? Well, the same thing holds true, okay? There is this principle of cause and effect. There is a principle of where you sow, you will reap. And that is the wages, what you get for sin is death. Does that principle end when you become a believer? No, it doesn't. Now, I may not worry about going to hell, but honestly, the concept of death is separation. And ultimately, that eternal death is separation from God. So as a believer, when I'm walking in darkness, John tells me in his epistle, I'm not what? I'm not in fellowship with He who is light. If we say we have fellowship with the Father and we walk in darkness, we lie and we do not the truth. But if we have fellowship with one another, if we walk in darkness, if we walk in the light, as He is in the light, we have fellowship with one another, and the blood of Jesus Christ's Son cleanses us from all unrighteousness. Thank you, Charles. If we say we have not sinned, we make Him a liar and do not the truth. If we confess our sin, He is faithful and just to forgive us our sin and cleanse us from all unrighteousness. If we say we have not sinned, we make God a liar and His word is not in us. What's the deal? Listen, the wages of sin is death. And if you think that you're above sinning, you really aren't biblical. You don't know the truth. But you should realize then, when you fall into sin, that you need to do what? Confess that sin. Be brought back into right relationship, fellowship with the Father. Because otherwise, where are you going to be? There's going to be a separation between you and Dad. And I promise you, God is not Jacob. He doesn't play favorites. In fact, we're told about God that He shows no impartiality, or He shows no partiality. He is very impartial. When His kids sin, Hebrews 12 tells us, He'll spank His kids. Just as He's going to hold those who haven't become His children through adoption, through the blood of Jesus Christ, accountable on the day of the great white throne, as He'll hold them accountable, so He will hold His kids accountable for their same actions. That's probably one of the problems with the United States, is we don't hold our kids accountable. But yet we want to act like God is one of these permissive parents. God is not a permissive parent. He's a loving father who will hold us accountable. There is a cause and an effect. I promise you, if you hit the spiritual cue ball, it's going to do something to the rack. It may be just one ball bouncing off if you're pretty weak. But if you're like me, a lot of times, you know, I'm like Martin Luther, who said if you're going to sin, sin abundantly. In other words, God knows you're sinning anyway, so if you're going to sin, you might as well just sin, you know. I mean, don't worry about who's going to see it, because ultimately the one that you care about is God, right? So a lot of times I'm kind of like that. I'm kind of like Peter and Paul and that kind of stuff. And when I hit the ball, I break the rack, you know. And be sure your sin will find you out. It's amazing how many verses we know that go along this theme, isn't it? And yet we what? We kind of push them down and push them away when we don't want to know about them. Joseph is, at least here in 37, is a perfect illustration of what the consequences of our actions can be. Okay? He couldn't help his dad playing him as a favorite, but he could help how he responded to it. I think he ate it up. And now later, we're going to have some good stories about Joseph here, okay? He is a hero of faith, okay? But that hero of faith still was a what? He was a man. And he was a man that God sought to use in spite of his failures, in spite of his weaknesses. And I want to encourage you, some of you young guys, you can be Josephs, and we need some Josephs in our world. We need a lot of Josephs to rise up, to be men of faith. But be careful, because you as well are just a man. Ladies, Josephinas, okay? We need some women of faith. But again, you are tempted in the same way that every person on the face of this earth is tempted. And we've got to be on the guard against it. So, in closing, do you have a problem with pride or slander? Now, I know you're not going to, you know, okay, put up your hands. How many of you have a problem with pride? Most of us might put up our hand on pride. You know, we say, oh, okay, we can deal with that because everybody's going to put their hand up. And then we find out, oh, two people. But, you know, but if I said to you, okay, how many of you guys have a problem with slandering? That you have a slanderous tongue? I guarantee you, not many. Some of you may be putting up a finger in your pocket or whatever because you want to be right before God and just say, at least I did it. But you're not going to put it up for everybody else to hear. And if you did, all the other slanderers in the room would talk about you. So, but, yes. But I want, again, I want us to remember what Jesus did with sins. He said, you have heard it said, thou shalt not commit adultery, but I say unto you, if you think it in your heart, you have committed adultery. You have heard it said, thou shalt not commit murder, but I say unto you, if you call them an idiot, empty-headed, you've murdered them. You can say, oh, I'm not the one, but I'm telling you, Jesus would say, if you think it in your heart, and if you like to twist things just a little bit, I know, I struggle. I mean, we all struggle. You know, I mean, it's an individual thing. When it comes between me and you, I sure move. You know, and we got to work on that and make sure that when we speak the truth, we speak the whole truth, nothing but the truth, and yes, speak the truth in love. That's exactly right. That we're not seeking to defame somebody else in the midst of that. Okay? Very easy to do that, okay? Because sometimes some of the things we say about somebody else may not be positive things, and we got to be careful how much embellishing we're going to put upon it. Not to make ourselves look really good. And so, I mean, we shared one thing a little bit earlier. You know, we were talking about something, and I was thinking, because I knew I was going to have this message, so I was even thinking about that as I'm sharing it. I'm thinking, you know, you know? And the reality is that we want to be careful, okay? So, do you have a problem with pride? How about slander? How are you doing at not playing favorites or showing partiality? Now, we can pick on mom and dad and say, oh, this is all about mom and dad. But you know what? If you own a business and you have employees, same thing holds true. You got to be careful that you're not having favorites. It's easy to have the favorites, and the favorites are the ones who do what? work. Do everything you tell them to do. That's exactly right. Okay? And so I'm not saying that, you know, again, there's not justice in everything that goes on. Again, we've talked about justice, okay? And those things happen. But again, I've got to be careful that I'm going to be impartial in how I teach everything. You know, one of the reasons why government becomes so big with rules and regulations is because people will not be self-governed, and they will not be self-governed in biblical principles. Why do you think equal opportunity and all those regulations came about? Because people weren't. Does that make sense? We may hate all the regulations that have come about because of it, but there was a time when it was necessary because people wouldn't be self-regulating. Does that make sense? And so, if we would be self-regulating, and this is what I teach my kids, if you act like an adult, you'll be treated like an adult. If you're trustworthy, you will be given trust. But when you show yourself not trustworthy, why should I trust you? If I can't trust you not to beat your brother over the head with a stick, why am I going to put a gun in your hand? That just doesn't make a whole lot of sense, does it? So if you want to go hunting with me, and for me to put a gun in your hand, I got to make sure that you're not going to get angry with me or feel miffed at me and decide that instead of hitting me, you're going to pull the trigger at me. Are you getting scenarios here? Okay. So partiality. I've got to become impartial in how I treat each of my children, but I've got to be impartial in just life itself. Okay. We've got to be self-governing people. When you feel slighted, how do you generally react? That's right. Do you lash out? Whether in your mind, with your tongue, or with your fist. You know, with CEF, okay, for those who've ever done CEF, okay, we teach the kids a definition of sin, the CEF definition. CEF stands for Child Evangelism Fellowship. The definition of sin for CEF is anything that you think, say, or do that displeases God. That's sin. Anything that you think, say, or do. We like this, anything you say or do. But Jesus very clearly taught us that what? It's even when you think it. It's even when you think it. So how do you react when someone slights you? Finally, do you have issues with controlling your anger? And is there a need for repentance or changing the way that you think? The word repentance, again in the New Testament, metanoia, means change the way you think. If you change the way you think, you'll ultimately change the way you act. And so the first step in changing the way you think is recognizing the fact that you have an issue. It's easy for us to look at the brothers. It's easy for us to look at Jacob. It's easy for us to look at Joseph. But I need to understand that there is no temptation, no troublesome situation that has overtaken me, but such is common to man. And probably in these accounts, in these stories, you might have seen yourself in every single one of the characters somewhere along in your life. If you see it, don't reject it. Don't squash it. Allow your heart to be flayed open for God and confess your sin, and He is faithful and just to forgive us of our sin and cleanse you from all unrighteousness. Let's thank the Lord. Father, I thank you for your goodness to us. Lord, I do pray that as your Holy Spirit works and as you challenge the hearts of each of us, not just the people, Lord, but myself as well, Lord, I know how you have challenged me in looking at all this as well. That you would cause us to increasingly have the desire to grow in your grace and knowledge. To be conformed to the image of your Son. We know, Lord, that that's your purpose for us. That is why you have predestined us. That we would be conformed to the image of Christ. That we would be a reflection to this world. That others would see and desire to come. That they would call upon your name. They would have the joy of salvation, that we would rejoice in their salvation as well. Lord, I pray that we would see the joy that you have desired for us to walk in and to live in for your glory. In Christ's name, amen.